We're studying Masechet Sanhedrin on Daf Kaf Aleph Amud Bet, middle of the Daf, page 21b, talking about kings in particular, King David, King Shlomo. We're learning from them some halachot, learning from them some Divrei Musar. We've learned about the dangers of having too many wives, too many horses, too much money. Even the wisest person in the world needed to be careful from, or he needed to be careful of his sechel too, is that not only through horses and money, also from marrying Paro's daughter. So not only do we have the fact that he married too many women, the fact that he married just one, Paro's daughter, which would seem to tie in more with Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon's view, that even one, maybe Rav Shimon, final view, that even one that turns away your heart is too many. Because we see that when he married Paro's daughter, I don't know when that was. Maybe according to a different shita, they would have an understanding about when it was he married Paro's daughter. Was it before 18 or after 18? If it was before 18, then it would fit with Rav Shimon. And if it was after 18, then it would fit with Rav Yehuda. As for the Tanakhama, we don't tell. Next, we are up to Marav Yitzhak. Marav Yitzhak, Rav Yitzhak said, Mifnei ma'alo nitzgalu ta'amei Torah. Rav Yitzhak said, what was the reason that the Torah did not give the reason for the mitzvot? Right? In some cases, the reason is given, but in most cases not. So he's talking about the majority of cases where we don't have any reasons for the mitzvot. And Rashi brings, where's the Rashi? Lodikalu ta'amei Torah. Kagon, for example, Lama ne'esra levishat shatnes. Why is it forbidden to wear shatnes? Ba'achidat chazir, and to eat pig, kiyotse bahem, and things like that. Right, so it's not all of them, but a lot of the mitzvot don't have reasons, and we don't know why. There's no apparent reason not to wear shatnez. There's no apparent reason not to eat pig. The Torah says not, but if the Torah hadn't said not to, we wouldn't have decided ourselves that was a good thing to do.
But if we give a reason, yeah, such as some 200 years ago would say, because pigs have trichinosis.
Yes.
And then the deformers, the enlightened movement, said, well, now that we have refrigeration, okay, we can eat pig.
Uh-huh.
You know, so the idea is you shouldn't try and justify a reason for a hook. It's like the red heifer. Even Shlomo HaMelech couldn't figure out why the red heifer would simply do the red heifer.
Right.
It doesn't fit into the category of not having one of those signs for the around.
Yeah, you're right. This is a good question. So maybe you could ask, but even if you know that it's, even if you say the reason is because it doesn't have the sign, that's just a description of the mitzvah. It's not necessarily the reason. So why is it that Hashem said that animals with, well, who cares whether it's got four legs, two legs, crawls, creeps, split, not split?
It could have said, yeah, instead of a pig, instead of maybe a horse.
Anything. Yeah. I think he picked these two because I think the Torah mentioned the pig. The Torah mentioned pig?
I think it mentions it directly, if I remember right.
Did the Torah mention directly pick chazir?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, does it mention pig directly? I think so. Same thing with camel, doesn't it?
Okay. So, right. Rabbi Yitzhak is. So he asks and answers the question really here. It's not really a it's not really a question asked to know the reason that he can. It's a lead into a drash. He gives the own answer. He says, "I'll tell you why the Torah did not give the reason for the mitzvahs. Why? Sharesh sei mikraot nitgalutama. Because when two verses reveal their reasoning, right? Where in two places there." At least two places, but in two places the reason was revealed. What happened? Nechshal Bahem Gadol HaOlam, the greatest one in the world, stumbled over them. Right? King Shlomo stumbled over them. Right? So?
Exactly.
So he's showing even the greatest, wisest person in the world stumbled over them. What were they? Ketir, that was written in one place. Lo Yavar Lo Nashim. You shouldn't increase wives. Why not? Because they'll turn away your heart. That's what the pasuk says. Amar Shlomo, Shlomo said, Ani alber v'lo asur. I will increase wives and they won't turn my heart away. I'll be careful. Lukativ, and it's written about Shlomo, Vayihi le'ev tignat, Shlomo, Ashav hitu et levavo. Written specifically that in his later years, in the time of his old age, his wives turned away his heart. And then a second case, it's written that you should not increase horses. Why not? In order that they won't return you to Egypt. And Shlomo said, I'll increase my horses, but I won't return to Egypt. Ve'kitiv, and it's written, Vateitse Markava Imitzrayim B'shesh. It's written about Shlomo, and the chariots left Egypt B'shesh. B'shesh here means, apparently means worth 600 silver coins is the rest of it. But if you were Madak Dek, on the Gemara, which you're allowed to be, you have to ask the question why it has the word B'shesh. You only need the bit of the passive that takes say Merkava Mitzrayim. B'shesh, why continue at that point?
Sounds like you're not sure of something.
That's what continues.
But usually when you bring the, for example, in the previous pasuk, what we said, V'hi Leidzik Nashlomo Nashav Hitu at Levavo, like the wise turned away his heart. So you stop the passage when you reveal the bit of information. V'hi Vateitse Markavo Mitzrayim, that would be enough. B'shesh, .. the B'shesh seems to me to be irrelevant, superfluous. It's not the relevant part of the passage. Why not stop it after the word Mitzrayim?
Something's going on with additional information.
Yes, that's just what I'm throwing out as a
question. And that's why I was thinking it was a gematria or something.
Oh, I see. Shush. Maybe that's an important part of the. No. Anything?
It's found a simple path by young that they turned his heart.
Yeah. You're looking
that's
for
a good question too.
Looking for the password.
Says
in Lachim Aleph. Good Kaftet. Yud Kaftet. No, Yud Kaftet.
Yud Kaftet.
I know, I've got Yud, comma Kaftet.
Mm-hmm.
Says here in the previous verse, what's the verse prior to that?
The previous verse.
So now we've got a second question, is why pick the second verse and not that first verse? The first verse appears to say that... So it seems to be that the second verse is the problematic one. Meaning the first verse, the fact that the horses came from Egypt is not a problem. But the fact that they came, that they were worth 600...
Apparently they were dealing in Egyptian horses.
Yeah.
It wasn't even for himself. He was getting, he was selling horses to the kings of Chittim and the king Ulamachi Aram, the Adam Yotziu. He was in the horse trading. He became a horse trader.
And it
was he was going back and forth to Egypt to
Because the problem is not that he.
He said, "Hello, Ashiv.
I
won't go back." And he's going back and sending his people back to get horses all the time. He's selling them. It says a chariot could be bought out of Egypt for such and such a money, and the horses for this. And it says Solomon's traders would also export for all the kings of Hittites and the kings of Aram. They're doing a trade.
What here indicates that he went back to Egypt?
I don't know.
We don't know what it means. What does it mean to go back to Egypt? And clearly he didn't.
Right.
He didn't necessarily physically go back to Egypt.
The king's traders bought them from Kevin for a high price. Never says that he didn't send his traders on the back.
Right. What's the problem in that?
Because
what's the verse? In the first one, it's clear that his heart was turned away. But here in the second one, what's the problem? The problem is that. I don't understand what the problem is. Right, what is it Hashem's trying to tell us not to do? So you won't go back to Egypt, what? Physically, mentally, spiritually?
If you're conducting business with Egypt,
yeah, so
it's like conducting business with Nazi Germany.
So? I hear it's not good, but is that what the Torah is prohibiting?
He liked a lot of foreign women, and the daughter of Paro, Moaviyot, Amaniyot, Adomiyot, Sedaniyot, Chitiyot. He liked them all. I guess as long as they were foreign, he liked them.
He was trying to fix the world.
From the nations that Asher Bnei Israel lo tovu bahem. Mostly took it from nations that God told him not that you shouldn't come to them. Vahem lo yavon vachem, and they shouldn't come to you. Vahem yatu haravchem, vahilo nashim, saro, shatzaro, shamiyot.
Right here, so Rashi has an answer. If you look on the And Rashi, just after the Gemara, the first Rashi on the Gemara, which is about, I know, 15, 20 lines down in Rashi, on the word lo. Yeah? So not lo. So he says here, Mashmal harachib da'ato bagdil b'rubui susim. Okay, so that's not really relevant for us right now. He's talking about increasing the number of horses. But he goes on to say, Hasusim ba'im mitzrayim. The horses come from Egypt. La'aret Israel, Shweret Israel. But sarich l'shloh shluchim. You need to send messengers, the knotlo, to buy for him susim, horses, the ovrim, and they transgress, the lo tosifu luotam, od, ad olam, that you won't continue to see them anymore. Right, so the problem with the verse is that you're not, apparently is, that we shouldn't see them, the Egyptians. We shouldn't do business with them. There's no other reason to be doing business with Egyptians apart from getting horses. There's nothing else that they have that's worthwhile that you'd want. Horses is the only valuable thing that they have. So we're being told, don't increase in horses, because if you increase in horses, you're going to want to get them from Egypt. Because you can get horses elsewhere. I suppose once you increase, you're going to be forced, or you're going to choose to get decent ones or whatever from Egypt. And then you're going to, like you said, do business with the Egyptians, which is what Hashem doesn't want us to do, because he doesn't want us to see Egyptians anymore. He told us at the Red Sea, when they were all dead, washed up on the shore, that you're not going to have to see them anymore. I think, is that where it's from, or is it from...
Yeah.
From Moshe, when Paris says, you won't see my face again, that's something different. And he says, you're right, we spoke well, you won't see me. I won't see you anymore. But you're right. But in the first case, the reason is given so that they don't turn your heart away, from Hashem. But the second one doesn't say don't get horses in order that they don't turn your heart away. It just said don't get horses in order that you don't go back there. And Rashi says going back there really means that you don't see them again. And he says here that you're going to send messengers to go to buy horses, and then you'll transgress that. So that's what happened in this pasuk in Rishlomo, that he sent messengers, traders, down to Egypt, and therefore he transgressed indirectly through his shlichim. He probably didn't go down himself. Through his shlichim, he transgressed the pasuk of not to see the Egyptians again.
That he did transgress.
Yeah, I guess also watching the news, seeing the Egyptians.
Going down to Egypt isn't a day trip. You have to spend some time, money, and effort to get down there and stay days, and you're going to be tempted to...
Yeah, but not necessarily. But here he's not saying you're going to be swayed, you're going to be turned away, you're going to learn stuff. He just says that there's a blanket ban on seeing them. Forget, you don't have to worry about what it's going to lead to. It might not lead to anything. We only know from the Pasukim that he sent traders to buy horses. We don't know that they did anything wrong when they went down there. They might have been the frumest Jews, and they kept all the laws and whatever. But that's not the problem. The problem apparently was simply seeing them. Right, but if the problem is a step further than what it would lead to, then there's no indication here that there was anything further. Like, we know that the Gemara is saying that Shlomo tried and failed in these two things. How did he fail? So he explains. He failed in the first one because his heart was turned away. And he failed in the second one because he sent messengers down to buy horses. And that apparently is a failure. Not that anything happened, because we don't know that anything happened. Because otherwise, Shlomo could have put his hand and said, I was correct. I sent people down, I sent my messengers to buy horses, and they were perfectly fine. And the pasuk doesn't tell me anything else. The pasuk doesn't say that they went astray. So if the problem was going astray, we don't know that that happened. Right, so the problem was just to go, stand, full stop. And that they did, right. So at that point, that's the problem. So it's, we're not saying that that was an offence because the real problem was what that leads to. We're saying that in itself was the problem.
But isn't this the hook, namely the commandments, and when Hashem says, don't go down to Egypt, he means don't go down to Egypt, and you shouldn't be doing that.
Rabbi says, no, but this is the reason. The commandment was don't increase horses. And the reason was so you don't go down to Egypt. It's not a commandment, it's interesting, it's not a commandment not to go down to Egypt. It's a commandment not to increase horses.
Isn't that also meaning?
Which is interesting.
Don't go after.
Not to marry a lot of women.
Yeah.
And why? Because
they will turn your heart.
Go down to Egypt.
But then it comes to the question about the reasoning. Is the reasoning a commandment by itself? Meaning, so that they don't turn your heart away. So that goes with Rabbi, again back to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, even if one turns your heart away. Whereas the Tanakhama says, no, you're allowed to increase. And that's the commandment. The commandment is not to increase women. The reasoning only comes after the fact. And so too with going down to Egypt. Is that a separate commandment? Because otherwise it applies to other things too. Or does it only apply to horses? Is there a general commandment not to go back to Egypt? Specifically. Right, forget horses. Maybe you don't like horses, you can't stand horses. But you're interested in trading in Egyptian silk. Have to look at the safer of the commandments. Rambam has a list. Can't remember the name now. There's a couple of Sfarim which list the commandments in the Torah and explain what they include and what they don't include. Sefer Hinoch? Maybe Sefer Hinoch, can't remember. Anyway, so you need to look over there what it means. Rambam, at least see what he says. The prohibition is what it covers. The question whether or not a person is allowed to go down to Egypt. Like, are you allowed to go to Egypt to visit the pyramids? Are you allowed to go to Egypt at all? Rambam lived in Egypt, so presumably he was aware of the law. He wouldn't have knowingly transgressed that.
Right, but by that time, wasn't Egypt part of the caliphate and totally influenced by the Arabs, by the Muslims?
So then it's a question, it's a supplementary question. Does the law apply? Was there a law? Would it apply in other circumstances? If they were really Egyptians, you wouldn't be allowed. But now they're not really Egyptians, they're just a mixed up bunch of people. Maybe you are allowed.
Right, that's my question.
Are you allowed to go back down to Egypt if you don't look at anyone? Is it going down to Egypt itself, or is it seeing the people, seeing the Egyptians, that's the problem? Lots of questions you can ask about this.
It's equivalent to Are you allowed to go back to Europe?
No, it's not, because this is a Torah commandment. There's no Torah commandments about going to Europe. It might be Musa and or
no,
stuff,
I mean,
but here...
I tell you that like an analogy.
Yeah, but here's a fixed Torah commandment from the Torah, the writer.
Right.
The Torah says, don't go back down to Egypt, but we have to know whether or not this is a commandment from Hashem or not to do that. What it is, what it covers. Ah, hold on. Let's look in the the Ein Mishpat. Where is it?
It says, as you see Egypt today, you won't
again
see them
again.
You are today.
Right. And that also not.
I think they're doing horses.
But that you're right. But he's saying, don't increase horses so that you don't come down and go down to Egypt. Which and then you would transgress. If you went down to Egypt, you would transgress that.
That would really, in a way, saying. It's really, he's saying here, you see Egypt now in front of you, a great army, you know, the best army in the world. The way you see them now, Lotus sequel to Lotus, you won't see them like this anymore.
But in terms of interpreting the Torah to work out the mitzvahs, there's a lot of pasukim which you have to say, is this just telling me a nice drosha, or is this just telling me a mitzvah for all time? That you will never see them, right? Because according to what Rashi's saying there's an Aveira to see Egyptians, apparently, from this Rashi on the Gemara, the first Rashi.
Yeah.
If you send Shlichim to buy horses, you'll be transgressed that Passover.
Don't we have a book of mitzvahs?
I don't know. Well, we've got the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, we've got the Shulchan Aruch, but we have to know where this is. I wanted to look at the.
Is there a footnote?
No, if we have a little number.
Could be that the Aviva has to see them with their horses and chariots. Not your best. Buying.
Give up. I want to pay so it doesn't appear to be. If you look at the Gibel in the Amish hat. I want Shah Halakha Gibel. Where's Shah? If you look on the Ein Mishpat, it tells you to look in at the Ein Mishpat here, just to refresh our memories. It's worth doing this. Like the goal of learning Gemara, one of the goals of learning Gemara should be the Gedolim, of the teachers, the Rabbanim, explain that a person should try to get to a place where he can learn a Gemara through to the Halakha. Right? We've got Mishnah, which is the overall general statement of the law. You've got the Gemara explaining the Mishnah. Then you've got the Halakha, which comes out of it. Right, the purpose, really, of one of the purposes of the Gemara is to teach us the law. Right, the bottom line law about what we need to do. And a lot of poskim say that a person should learn the Gemara in order that he can get to the sack, not necessarily himself, not at that level, but to see how the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch are the two main pillars, got to their law. Like, if I just open the Shulchan Aruch and we learn the Shulchan Aruch, so I learned that I meant to wash my hands in the morning three times and blah, 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 all the nice books. If I learn that back from in the Gemara and then see how he got to that law, particularly if it's a complicated sugya with different opinions, Tanakhama, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda, etc., and all the different svaras, why did he say this, what was he thinking, why he then after that, to see what the poskim say is the final halacha, to understand why they discounted this one, why, right? Then I've got the whole thing, like got the figure. So in order to do that, it's a good idea that when you have found a particularly interesting sugya that you got into a lot, that you understood backwards and forwards as best as you can, that you go to the top right hand corner to the Amish Pat and see what the final halacha was on that subject. So here I'm taking it from the Mishnah. If you look on the daf in the Mishnah, the beginning of the Mishnah says Lo Yobel Lo Susim. At the beginning of that we've got a little gimel. So that little gimel takes me to the Amish Pat. And the Amish Pat has got two sets of numbering. It's got here Nun Aleph, Nun Bet, Nun Gimel. But that's just because the typesetter chose to number all of the Amish Pat from the beginning of the Perek. But on the page itself, we start Aleph, Bet, Gimel. We start from the top. Aleph, Bet, Gimel. So the second number in is the relevant number. The first number is just counting from the beginning of the Perek how many Amish Pats there are. You with me? Right, so you see the Nun Aleph, Nun Bet, Nun Gimel. You see the Nun Aleph, Nun Bet, Nun Gimel? So that is irrelevant. That simply is counting from the beginning of the Perek how many, and they right, but it's irrelevant here. No, it's not used for anything. So what is used is the Aleph Bet, the next letter in. After the Nun Bet, Nun Aleph is for, it's actually numbered Aleph Bet Gimel. Each page starts again a fresh number, Aleph Bet Gimel.
What is the memory?
Right, so hold on, we'll get to that. So the Aleph Bet Gimel is the number that we're looking for. Right, that's a relevant number that's referenced on the page itself. Right, so once we get to that, so then we have to understand what the other references are. So on our Gimel, we've got Mem Yud Yud. Mem Yud Yud stands for Maimonides, which means Rambam, obviously, right? So there's basically only three different types of references which are included here. So one is Rambam, which is Maimonides, Mem Yud Yud. The other is the Shulchan Aruch, which is Shin Ayin. I think Lee Miller, I'll have to find one here that says Shin Ayin. Shin Vav. Hold on, let's find a Shulchan Aruch reference here. We don't get so many because the Shulchan Aruch actually doesn't cover as much as you think it would. Yeah, there we go. Tor Shulchan Aruch. If you look in Chet, can you see Chet?
Yeah.
Okay, so in Chet, if you go down three lines in Chet, third word in, it said Taf Vav Tor Shulchan Aruch. So that's the Shulchan Aruch's reference. It's like that. But Maimonides is Rambam, Mem Yud Yud. And the other one is the Smag. A Smag was a third categorization of mitzvahs. But we don't really rely on the Smag. The stands for the Sefer Mitzvot Gedolot, something like that. Alright? Actually goes there, Smag. Anyway, so but I don't even know, I haven't even seen the book. But so
he's one of the posts, you know?
Yeah, he was. He's brought down on the page. He's like the third one that's brought in the Amish Pat. But for us, for our purposes, we refer to either Rambam or the Shulchan Aruch. Rambam pretty much comments on almost everything. Like you, like Rambam is on almost all of these references, and Shulchan Aruch probably on about half of them. Smag also on pretty much all of them. So here we haven't got a Shulchan Aruch. Maybe because Shulchan Aruch doesn't deal with the section, have a section on Hilchot Malachim. Shulchan Aruch only dealt with the halachas which apply today. So anything to do with Moshiach, Eretz Yisrael, Malachim, he doesn't cover. They weren't relevant. So that tells you in the Rambam to go, where do you go? So here, Maimonides, Pei Gimel, what's that? That means Perek Gimel. right? Pe is the perek, and then here perek gimel. Me, he lamed, hilchot, malachim. Hilchot malachim. And then he lamed gimel, halacha gimel. So we've got Maimonides, perek gimel, me hilchot malachim, halacha gimel. Okay? Now when you go down to the bookshelf, and you look at the Rambam, there's I think there's six volumes, maybe? There's six volumes of the Rambam's Mishneh Torah. Right? It's the Mishneh Torah is his list of mitzvot in the Torah. It's also known as the Yad Hazakah, which says here, who Yad HaHazakah. It's also known as the Yad or the Yad Hazakah. Right? Rambam. Okay. Now, if you look on there, you'll see that there's no Hilchot Malachim listed on the spine, right? There's Nashim, Nezikim, Moadim, right? And you know, and you're like, well, where's Malachim? So you don't know, so you have to guess. You have to look through the major headings. So if you're looking for Shabbat, some law on Shabbat, it's probably in Moadim. There's a subsection. These are the main headings, and the subsections are within them, but it's not listed. So here, but Hilchot Malachim, the laws of kings, is not listed on the spine, right? So I have to guess which one of these major headings that's going to be found in.
So, do they have an index?
Probably, but I don't know where it is. So this is what I was taught by Bachamayeva, by Rav David Sperling, when he taught the same thing. But you just have to guess. There may be anything. So Hilchot Malachim, where's that? No idea where that is. So I looked through the six books on the spine to see which one is most likely. So I came to, it's likely to be in Mishpatim and Shoftim. Why? Because we're in the laws of Sanhedrin and kings and laws. It was the most fitting. So what I then did, I went to the beginning to see if there's an index. Right, at the beginning of the book. There's not. Right? So instead, so then the next thing I did is just flick through the pages and read the top heading on Lover the Malver. Then we've got Toen Benitan. Doesn't help me. Hilchot Nachalot. No, it doesn't help. Hilchot Sanhedrin. Oh, maybe you're getting closer to Sanhedrin, maybe. And then after Sanhedrin, Hilchot Eidut. Hilchot Namarim. Hilchot Evel. And then, oh, Hilchot Malachim. There it is, Hilchot Malachim. So, you got lucky, Hilchot Malachim. Look for Perek Gimel. Perek Shlishi, here we go. Look for Halacha Gimel, Aleph Bet Gimel. Found Gimel, and then you've got to hope that you got it right. And then read it. So what does it say? So it says over here on Halacha Gimel in the Rambam. V'lo yaber lo susim, and he shouldn't increase horses. Ela kedei merkavato, only enough for his army. Right. So here already you can see that's taken direct from the Mishnah. And Rambam continues. So Rambam he'll give the quote if it's relevant, and then his own commentary or additions to the law or explanation of the law, what it means. So he continues and he writes the following. Afilu sus echad, even one horse, panui, that's free, meaning idle, right? Liyot rats lefanav, to run in front of him. Kederech shosim shah malachim, like the way that the other kings do. Asor, it's forbidden. In one, so that's how we understand. Now we now understand that sukkah before, what it meant when it was talking about not even one and the other horses. So even one that runs ahead. Ve'im hosif loker. And if he does increase, loker, he gets whipped.
So he gives the king gets whipped.
Yeah, he gives the punishment of Malkot. But interestingly, right, so that's the now, in order to understand the Rambam, has commentaries. The two major commentaries on the Rambam, here we've got three on this page, but the two major commentaries that are known are the Kesef Mishnah and the Lechem Mishnah. So if you don't understand the Rambam, is often not so easy to understand. There was two commentaries on the page, at least. Here we've got four, actually, altogether, that can explain what he means. I'm just going to look in there to see if there's anything in the commentary that helps us. So he's just explaining here in the Kesef Mishnah why he says only one horse. He explains the sugya as to how Rambam understood the sugya, the even one horse. Not that you're allowed one horse, even one horse itself. Eight horses. You get whips for each additional horse.
So there's nothing about returning to Egypt.
No, so he doesn't bring that here. We'd have to look at a sefer which dealt with from the Torah, and that passage in the Torah. That's why there's a sefer. What was it called? It's a sefer. I have it at home, I think. That goes through the goes by the sefer that goes by the parasha of the Torah. It takes out the halachas from the Torah. But interestingly, in the question of the second question that we looked at in the Mishnah about the wives, you know, we looked at the wives, we saw there were three opinions: whether you're allowed up to 18 or more than 18 if they turn your heart away, or even one if they turn your heart away. So Rambam says in Halacha Bet, he says lo yobel lo nashim, a person should increase wives. Mipi Hashmua, according Mipi Hashmua, from that which we heard. Mipi Hashmua, Shmua, from that which we heard. Lamadnu Shehu Lokea Ad Shmon Esra Nashim. From that which we heard, we learned that he can take up to 18 wives. Bain Hanashim Uplegashim, whether wives or plegashim, hakol shmonasrei, the sum total is 18, whether they're wives or what do we call plegashim?
Concubines.
For im hosif achat uba'ala loker, and if he increases one and he has relations with her, then he is whipped. For yesh lo legaresh belisa acheret tachat zu shegeresh, and he is allowed to divorce and to marry another one in place of the one he divorced. So you're allowed to have 18 running at a time. So if you divorce one, you are allowed to have another one, and it doesn't transgress the law of having 18.
That's important.
Right.
So what Harton read about how many wives he had,
yeah,
it split them into Nashimitz. He had 700 wives and 300 Pilakshot.
Right.
So you might think that it doesn't
right.
include the blood show right. the 18 months.
Uh-huh. So yeah. Here, so one might answer two questions that we wouldn't have known.
Yeah.
Firstly, whether or not it's included or not. And secondly, are you allowed to swap in and swap out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what, 1,000? 700 plus 300 is 1,000, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he had 1,000 wives. Shama had 1,000 wives.
at
so
once.
He went past the 18th by a show of hands.
No, all at once.
What do you mean all at once? During his lifetime.
During his lifetime. So he could have had 18 wives.
No, not unless he lived a lot, many hundreds of years. You're right. He could have had 18 and then sequentially divorced them and married, divorced and married. Divorced. I'm not sure that's what he did though. From the Pshat of the verses, he didn't do that. He had 1,000. Right? We see from the verse he went past the. He failed. He didn't keep to the law. Tov, that was the lesson for today.
Okay.